This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
Goodness sake, Beth, keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Happy Thursday. Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Appreciate you being with us this afternoon. The manhunt continues for this CEO of the United Healthcare Company. He was gunned down within feet of walking out of his hotel to go across the street in New York City yesterday. And this gunman shoots him down. And the more we talk about this, this is the most movie-like murder I think I remember witnessing. All of this happening the way it's happening right now, it doesn't seem like we're talking about somebody's dad. This guy has two children in high school. And people are like really keying in from a conversation standpoint on the fact that, you know, insurance denies a lot of people's claims. And I'm just thinking, it's 20 days until Christmas. And this guy has lost his life at the hands of an assassin, whether he is like the James Bond kind of super skilled and qualified hitman. Everybody's an expert on this right now, by the way. I might add. Ryan. You're taking a pass on this?
Yeah, this is the one area where I am not an expert.
I have seen so many people who have the qualifications to be experts come to unequivocal conclusions that completely disagree with other people who are completely qualified. So I don't know what it, I mean, I am not going to solve this murder in St. Louis. We got our own murders here that we do or don't solve in the city of St. Louis. But I'm just thinking of the complete and total ease with which we take stories like this. And it's very sad. It's a sad thing to see this happened yesterday. And then, you know, this is a man who is a father and a husband. And I don't know the details behind the story. I don't know anything about this guy other than the fact that he's a CEO of an insurance company, a major insurance company. But I am not like, we don't have an alternative, but I'm not really okay with the idea that a man could be gunned down, a father could be gunned down, a husband could be gunned down on a 2 or 3 day business trip to New York City. And within hours, you can see exactly how it happened. And now we're talking about words that are written on the shell casings and everything like it's some murder mystery. It's so, I mean, this, for whatever reason, maybe it's humanity, this is very sad.
It's wild. I went home last night and got the chance finally to sit down and actually talk to my wife. You know how life goes where you're like, oh, I'm going to go this place this night. Well, I finally talked to her. I said, did you see this story about this? She hadn't. And she looked it up and she said, oh my gosh, the CEO for United Healthcare was just assassinated. And the first thing I thought when I saw the story, you know, the day before, and that she thought was, well, this guy had to be an older guy. Nope.
No, he's 50.
I said, honey, this guy was our age.
Yes.
Almost.
Your age.
Well, not quite. I didn't know. I actually didn't know he was 50. I thought he was younger than that.
Nice 50.
But just based on the age of his kids, I mean, that's a very young guy. So I think that's another just weird part of this story is that it, you know, he was such a young man to be a CEO of a major healthcare company.
I just looked. I have United Healthcare. I didn't know that.
I thought I did.
I know that we just had enrollment. You all, very likely just had your enrollment, and you go through and you see how everything's getting more expensive and so on and so forth. But who likes healthcare? Who likes the healthcare system?
Nobody.
No one.
You probably have to be on the inside benefiting in a way that doesn't really have anything to do with healthcare in order to prefer the way that this is going. But we don't see things like this. And one of the experts that I saw on Fox News, I'm going to pull up the article here so I can give you the actual name of it, from foxnews.com. And we see him regularly commenting on Fox News. He's a former NYPD inspector and Fox News contributor, Paul Morrow. The way the video shows this hit taking place, this guy walks out of the hotel. This guy slips out from like between vehicles or whatever. He's got a hood on. He doesn't even have like a significant disguise. He's got his face covered. And he pulls up a gun, which looks like it has a silencer on it. Or maybe it's a gun that was from World War II, starting blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter to me. And he just sticks his hand out, shoots him a few times, turns around, walks away, gets on a bike. I mean, this looks like it's from Blue Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
Or CSI Miami or New York or whatever it is. It's like this looks different than what we traditionally consume when it comes to crime and murder and violence. And the thing of it is that we consume so much of it. This is, to me, it's like this is just a story. And really, it's a human life. I want to follow this story and see what ends up happening. I think we also get to the point where, as people who consume news, you're formulating all of these very dramatic storylines in your head while you're waiting for the actual details to come out. And then when the details aren't as dramatic or salacious as they might have been hyped up to be, you lose interest. We do this with hurricanes. The lead up to a hurricane, everybody is like, you know, chattering on their fingernails and freaking out. And then the hurricane comes and people are like, oh, that wasn't as bad as they said it was going to be. Like, that's a bad thing. It's kind of a bizarre study of human nature to watch these stories develop and see how the masses consume the stories and what draws people in and what doesn't. The Daniel Penny trial, we could have a verdict be read on this in our show. It could be this week. I don't know how long they'll deliberate. I would assume that the longer they deliberate, the better for Daniel Penny, because, you know, one of the things that is important, if you've never served on a jury, I've gone to jury duty, but I've never been selected for one. And the one that I actually kind of got a little bit further into was a criminal trial. So it's kind of, I would love to have see the process there, but I guess I'll be careful what I wish for. You have to, beyond a reasonable doubt, prove that what the defendant is being alleged to have done, that you believe that's what happened beyond any reasonable doubt. So it's not like you have to know that they didn't do it. You have to be proof positive sure that they did in order to convict somebody. In New York City right now, what a pivotal moment. I talked about this yesterday with Harris Faulkner. Being from St. Louis, where I would really say that the anti-police sentiment really got its legs out of the Ferguson situation here in 2014, we have for 10 years been anti-police, pro-criminal, completely, completely confused as to what an actual victim looks like, and so cowardly in our willingness to confront any of it. Everybody has been quiet for so long with cowardice to not look at someone like Daniel Penny and the body of work that his life is, to see the situation that was going on that subway car, to know what he did. And, you know, if I don't know if they asked Daniel Penny this, or if he's ever addressed this, would he do what he did again if he were in that position? If his child, if his daughter were sitting in that car with him, would he do that again? If my child, even if my adult child is sitting on that car and somebody's acting cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs like Neely was acting, where's law enforcement? We've told law enforcement to sit down and to understand the plight of the people who might be in mental duress and, oh yes, under the influence of drugs, that we give them spaces to do those drugs now. I mean, you're getting what you've asked for societally, culturally today, and it obviously doesn't work. Daniel Penny should not be in a position to have to not invoke justice, but invoke calm and stability and peace. Because none of the people on that subway car had that in that moment. They had fear. And that fear was being put upon them intentionally by somebody who was under the influence of K2, which is like a super hyped up, what is it? It's not ketamine. Is it ketamine?
Might be.
It's like a super dose. I think it's like a super dose of marijuana or something like that. I know not of what I speak. Under the influence, I believe schizophrenic. And he's on there saying that he doesn't care what happens to him, and he's threatening people around him. You've got a guy who serves in the military who steps in and neutralizes a situation, and he's on trial right now in New York City. I sure hope they get this one right. This is kind of a bellwether for the years to come when you are walking through the streets of St. Louis. Do you want more Pennies or do you want more Neelys? Or do you want more local government common sense and more police officers, more people in uniform to walk around these streets that make you feel safe? People don't feel safe. And we've played Mayor Adams' comments about the illegal immigrant problem that takes place in New York City. We've played the Chicago conversations of people asking Brandon Johnson, why are you taking our tax dollars and using them to protect illegal immigrants who are sucking us dry here where people don't have what they need and you're still taxing the hell out of them in Chicago? It's like the greatest tax burden that exists in the country. Chicago, Illinois. Donald Trump couldn't come at a better time, because what these people need is they need backup. They need to know that when you go and you serve justice, that they're going to have the backup for it. You remember when the Michael Brown situation happened here with Darren Wilson and everybody learned about Ferguson? And what was it? Eric Holder and Obama's Justice Department came in and checked mm-hmm. everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that Darren Wilson didn't need to be charged with anything. They left. People don't know that. People don't care about that. And that was 10 years ago. And I'm wondering if the arc of this obscene lack of common sense and lack of courage, maybe that arc is about a 10-year arc. Maybe we're about to get back to normal. Wouldn't you like to know, as your kids are coming of age, Ryan, that wherever they go, that they're going to be in a safer United States of America?
Heck yeah. I mean, this is what Common Sense America just decided. Everybody got together and said, you know what? I may not even, the middle voters especially, I may not even be a Republican. I don't know about conservatism. In fact, Trump, kind of a weird guy. I don't know if I like that. But I know one thing. I know that I want to be safe. I know that this immigration problem is much bigger than they're making it out to be. And I know that the economy is not what I want it to be, even though they're telling me that it's fine. So Common Sense America really just won about a month ago.
And how much have you felt the obligation in this amount of time to take measures to protect yourself?
More than ever.
What is it? Like 3 minutes before, from the time you call 911, like the average is 3 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
But if you call 911, you see these posts online. If you call 911 in the city of St. Louis, you could walk to the police department faster than you're going to get a hold of somebody.
It's so terrible. That's supposed to be your first. That's why it's 911. You don't have to remember a whole lot of numbers. It's easy to call.
But people don't answer. I had a dear friend of mine get into an accident. This was maybe in the last year and a half or so. They got into an accident. It was a definite need to call the police type of an accident. It was by, I think, Children's Hospital. And they called me texted me or called me to say, do you know another way to get a hold of the police in the city of St. Louis? Because they had been holding, they had been trying to get through 911 for 45 minutes. They had cars stalled in the middle of a major intersection. And they were at, like, by the time you're calling me and asking me if I can get to the police, you've exhausted your other options. Yeah. I'm not at the top of the list. And no, I don't have the ability to summon the St. Louis police. I know people who are members of the St. Louis police, and I messaged one of them, and they're like, you just got to keep calling.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that is a description. I hate saying this because I don't want to be like Chicken Little all the time, but that is a description of, like, crumbling society.
Absolutely.
Failed state.
Yes.
Yes.
It's not safe. It's not a situation where you're going to send your family members out. You're not going to establish a business under these conditions. You're not going to patronize the businesses that have been there and have been amidst the ruins the entire time. That's not the way you grow a culture and society. It is the way it deteriorates. It's a great point. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Hogan Gidley's going to join us. He's America First Policy Institute's senior advisor for communications. And he is very, very strongly saying that pardon for Hunter Biden, that's not just for Hunter Biden. He says it's for Joe. And he's going to talk to us about that when we come back. I'm asking you on the YouTube live chat poll, will Joe Biden pardon himself? That's never been done before, and everybody thought the first man to pardon himself as president would be Donald Trump. Maybe Joe Biden will beat him to the punch. You think he will? Andy Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back.
President Biden sparked a wave of bipartisan backlash this week, announcing the sweeping pardon of his son Hunter. But according to new Politico reporting, it may not be the only pardon that Biden grants. Jonathan Martin reports this. President Joe Biden's senior aides are conducting a vigorous internal debate over whether to issue preemptive pardons to a range of current and former public officials who could be targeted with President-elect Donald Trump's return to the White House.
Well, CNN is talking about Donald Trump potentially pardoning his enemies. And it's kind of interesting to me that Donald Trump was just resoundingly elected in what I don't think anybody could have seen coming, an enormous political comeback. So the people who are in opposition to Donald Trump, there's a reason why America said we choose Trump to stop the type of people who are currently in office from doing the things that they're doing. Why would Joe Biden think that those, you know, air quotes, enemies, that what they're doing would be worthy of a pardon? Seems kind of strange to me, doesn't it? Hogan Gidley joins us once again, America First Policy Institute, senior advisor for communications. Hogan, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's good to have you here.
Great to be with you. I appreciate the time, Annie.
You as well, as always. The Hunter Biden pardon that came down this weekend, it wasn't just like, he's my son and I love him and he did these two wrong things. It was much, much broader than that. Why do you think that is?
It was broader because in large part, this is not a pardon for Hunter Biden. It's a pardon for Joe Biden. He's concerned about anything and everything that comes out regarding a Hunter Biden trial that would implicate the Biden crime family. So he doesn't want any part of that being exposed. Look, I understand. A lot of people are saying, look, you know, if you were going to pardon your son, pardon your son. That's part of the deal. The problem is Joe Biden lied about this repeatedly on camera to different reporters saying he would never do this. He got his lackeys in the press to agree. They parroted everything he said. They covered for him. They carried his water per usual. And then he even made the press secretary go out there and say the same thing. Now, she has no credibility if she had any before. He definitely doesn't have any credibility as if he didn't have any before. And the whole thing is imploding on itself. And now there's a question over pardons. And I do love the fact that when Donald Trump was issuing pardons to people that actually served jail time, who actually paid debts to society, the left lost its collective mind. But when Joe Biden goes out there and pardons his own son, you know, who hasn't served a day in jail for the crimes he clearly committed and admitted to, it's farcical. Now, I will say what's fascinating is that Joe Biden came into office lying about the Hunter Biden laptop being fake. He's leaving office by pardoning Hunter Biden for all the things that were on the laptop. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the laptop because it has been a detail, a footnote, unfortunately, in the entire administration of Joe Biden. But what we know from that laptop, what the laptop has corroborated, what when we see people like Tony Bobulinski coming out and talking about Biden Inc. and what the brand was that was being sold on behalf of the American people through Joe Biden, there's a lot more there than a gun charge in Delaware and some tax evasion that he had somebody else pay off. Do you think it's likely that we'll see Joe Biden pardon other people who might be attached to Hunter, maybe even so much as including himself?
Proactively, he could do that. There's some reports out there about all types of people, whether it be Dr. Fauci or others. And you have to ask yourself, is that an admission of guilt or is it something he's trying to protect himself against? Regardless, James Comer and the folks over at the House did an outstanding job exposing the shell companies, for example, the millions of dollars the family received, the emails, the text messages, the dinner dates, the lunch drop-bys, the phone calls in the middle of the night. Showing the relationship between Hunter and Joe was more than just a father-son, but it was also a business relationship. And I think Joe Biden, rightfully so, is worried about that. His legacy is clearly tarnished, not just because they ran him out of office, ran him off the ticket, rather, for his horrible debate performance. But also the fact that they've been lying about his health for so long. In addition to that, the corruption that has followed this Biden family for a long time, I don't think we'll know the full scale of it for years to come. But it's so obvious to so many, and I think the House has done a good job exposing it. So these pardons could definitely be a preemptive move to prevent any future attacks, I guess, by the right or by lawyers who see all the wrongs that Joe Biden and his family have done.
We're speaking with Hogan Gidley. He is America First Policy Institute's senior advisor for communications. I think that the America First Policy Institute is an important part of this whole conversation because we're watching what, during the transition, what the Biden administration, those actions that they're taking right now, handing out money in Africa while the president of the United States falls asleep, pardoning people in his own family, broadly so. But in the midst of all of that, we've actually, in my opinion, heard way less from the Trump transition team than we're used to hearing, of course, of him on the campaign trail. And to me, it's really looked like there's a definite plan in place for this period of time so that on day one, Donald Trump is able to start doing what the American people sent him to do. How would you assess post-election in this transition time what the Trump administration has been able to do so far?
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up because what they are focused on is the American people. They obviously have a mandate. They won the popular vote. They won all the swing states. They're focused on successes. Donald Trump did this the first time around. He's going to do this the second time around as well. And the fact that they're putting out these cabinet secretaries immediately tells you what they are focused on is getting the people in place right now so that when he is sworn in, he can begin moving. Remember, the 100-day window starts pretty quick. He won't be a lame duck because no title like lame duck is ever going to apply to Donald Trump. He's always going to keep moving. But he wants the House, the Senate, and his cabinet secretaries to move forward on that America First agenda quickly, especially because you'll have the midterms coming up and you want to flex a little muscle and show Republican governance, Republican legislative activity is far superior to that of the Democrats because it actually improves the lives of all Americans.
Yeah, that leading up to this point, it's promises made, and then this next 2 years is the opportunity to show the American people promises kept. AFPI has been a very, very great partner in setting up this opportunity for Trump to come in, to be able to make this transition and do it in a very orderly fashion. Do you believe that on day one, Donald Trump, is it going to come fast and furious for all of us sitting here watching to see what he's going to do?
Yes, I was on set with some reporters the other day. We were arguing about something on a panel, and they made a comment there was breaking news that Donald Trump had just announced a new secretary of something or other. And I pointed out, you better get used to saying breaking news as relates to Donald Trump because he moves at breakneck speed, not to mention the fact you guys have been sitting on your hands for 4 years, not doing any type of reporting or any type of movements because Joe Biden was so slow. I said, you've had your rest for 4 years. Get ready because the next four are going to be fast.
Yeah. Every time I see Hogan Gidley on one of those other networks, I always pause because I'm like, this is going to be a treat. So we always appreciate when you come on with us as well. Hogan.
Anytime.
Thank you so much. It's always great to speak with you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hogan Gidley, America First Policy Institute Senior Advisor for Communications. He's also the former National Press Secretary for the Trump campaign in 2020. He served as the former Principal Deputy Press Secretary for the Trump administration. He's a straight shooter, and he's been coming coming on our show since Donald Trump was the president the first time. So it's always great to be able to squeeze him back in. We were supposed to have him on yesterday, but the timing didn't work out. What do you want to see first? I mean, first of all, what are we going to do for the inauguration? Isn't that going to happen in our show?
Yes, but it's on MLK Day. So
we'll be here.
We're gonna have to fight, Steve and Trisha.
I'm gonna be here. You don't even have to open up the microphone. I'm gonna sit here and talk to this room.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, how could we have the day off as a company, but how could we miss that day? So I imagine we're gonna be following that, because it's gonna be, man, do you remember watching the inauguration in 2016?
Yes.
I do, too.
And 2020.
I did not watch. I mean, I didn't work here in 2016. I was in an office place with people who, some of them I knew their politics, others I didn't. So you're sitting there watching in this historic event. And I thought at the time, naively, that Trump was going to start saying things that were like normal presidential things during that inauguration. He did not.
No, he did Trump.
He said, here's what we're going to do. And he said the same exact thing as when he was campaigning.
When Donald, that was a key moment, like a very pivotal moment. I can think of two moments in his presidency early on that were very definitive. That was one of them. When he didn't come on and give the bologna sausage Joe Biden unity speech.
Yes.
Which was horse hockey.
Yeah, it was.
He didn't give that speech. Donald Trump won the election. And everybody was waiting for him to start being, what was the word? Presidential.
Presidential.
And Donald Trump, I am presidential Donald Trump. Welcome to this new version of doing it. The second time he did it was the State of the Union. I have goosebumps thinking about the first State of the Union.
I don't remember that.
Oh, my gosh. I do. I don't even think it was technically called a State of the Union, because it's a joint congressional something. Because
it's an address.
You can't be elected and then 2 weeks be like, here's the State of the Union.
Right.
You're like, I've been telling you about the State of the Union for 2 years, and that's why I just got here.
Right.
But he handled that presidentially. He his first actual State of the Union, when he went in there, it was wonderful. It was so great to watch and see and know that he was in charge. The inauguration, the swearing in ceremony is at 11 a.m. our time. Noon Eastern. Get them in here right now. I need to know. I need to know, because at 11, like, I don't, is he going to give a, if I were him, I'd be like, I'm going to give a speech, but I'm going to do it later because I got stuff to do. Thank you for sending me here. I am here for you, and I'm going to go work for you right now. The executive orders that are going to be lined up for him to sign are going to be many of the same ones that Joe Biden signed on day one, but like, the reverse.
Yeah.
They'd be doing the cha-cha slide the whole time. They're putting America on the right track.
I mean, yeah, that's not going to be good radio.
To the right now, y'all. Charlie Brown. Charlie Kirk.
The difference is,
we change the cha-cha slide to be something conservative?
No, we can't. I'm sorry.
it's a crime against humanity.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the difference between 2016...
Just so you know.
Is that in 2016, we didn't know. This year, we know what we're getting into. We still voted for the guy, overwhelmingly. But the thing is, this year, if you notice, we haven't really heard from Donald Trump that much since he got elected.
I just said that to Hogan Gidley.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was walking over here and I didn't have my headphones on.
No, I made that.
I walked out.
I asked
and walked
that
back
question
in.
Of Hogan Gidley, because the America First Policy Institute, Heritage Foundation, as well, Project 2025. It's okay, Libs. It'll be fine. Everybody, quiet down. It'll be okay. Snuggle
Charlie
your
Brown.
Blanket.
Yeah. Yeah, don't say Charlie Kirk. They won't like that.
When you look at how quiet they're being, and I was talking to Hogan Gidley about that, America First Policy Institute has been telling us this for 4 years. If and when Donald Trump gets back into office, we've got everything ready day one. We've got the people ready. We've got the policies ready. We've got the executive orders written up already. It's all done. Now, does Donald Trump come in and have a say in that? He has all of the say in that. But if you continue to listen to the people who come on the show and talk about how Donald Trump operates, especially when it comes to foreign policy issues, like we spoke with Jim Carafano on Tuesday, and we're talking about what's going on in the Middle East, Donald Trump surrounds himself with people who don't agree on things, and he listens to them, and then he makes a decision, which is what a wise man does. Put the smartest people in the room on any particular issue, surround me with them, and I will use, in my wisdom, the opportunity to provide the greatest conglomerate of a decision with all information source and all perspectives considered. That's type of stuff has been done. And he's got to just get everything in place now, which is stuff that they did after they got inaugurated last time. It's going to be glorious. It's going to be amazing.
That's typically what a leader, a president, a good prime minister would do, is they come in and they have lots of advisors. That's why you have so many people around you. They advise on very, very important things. And then the leader got elected because he has a vision, and he goes, well, how do we achieve that via your advice?
Yeah.
It is also the exact opposite of what Joe Biden has been, and actually what most Democrats have been, because if you notice, Democrats, it's a machine running everything. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a primary since 2008, if you think about it, because they just rigged every single one of them to get the candidate that they wanted. So with Joe Biden in particular, you have a candidate or a president who was just doing what the machine set up for him to do. Not just because of Alzheimer's, but because that's what, that's what the Democrat machine does.
It's okay, Dr. Wiggins. That's what I've done here. I've surrounded myself with the smartest people in the room, and I listen to what you guys have to say and go from there. What was your lane?
Just to clarify.
Medical expertise.
I'm not a medical doctor.
Which is the second day in a row this show has had to say that. But yesterday it was like, if your mind is telling you you're fat and it's Zumba and you can't breathe. I said keep going, but not as medical advice.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad it was you yesterday.
Yeah, it was. I am no doctor. Let's take a quick break. Wiggins America, we come back. We are going to find out, here's your lane, ways to cheap out on Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. That's Wiggins America today. If you're looking to cheap out on Christmas, I got you covered.
Oh, or at least half covered. Half off or half on?
That depends on optimist or pessimist.
How you look at it. Wiggins America next. Don't go away.
Wiggins!
Oh! Wiggins!
I know why you're here. It's because you want to save money on Christmas.
That's the only reason to listen to this show.
When people tune into the Annie Fry Show, they're like, how do I save money on Christmas?
Some people are trying to save money when they go to Macy's. We're trying to save money for the country.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And when we talk, that's what we're doing.
Nice.
I could tell you were midstream and you didn't know whether to go back to shore where you came from or try to keep swimming.
Don't worry about it. I was on my horse. Sacrificed the horse. No, the horse went downstream.
I'm going to say this out loud.
You drowned.
No.
I'm going to say this out loud so it doesn't happen, but I need to sneeze. So at some point in time during the segment, it's mm-hmm. like it's like the word of the day. When I sneeze,
if you
call,
sneeze, I will not.
We call her six.
I will absolutely stop and point it out.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to try to not make it public.
This is called Ways to Cheap Out on Christmas. The first one.
This is called. Is this like a dissertation?
It can be.
We need a music bed or something on here?
No, not at all.
Can you do it as Ryan Shire Wigglesworth?
Nope. First one, cut back on your list. This seems like an obvious place to start.
Buy less.
Stop buying so much. This is from cheapism.com.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, yesterday's was too.
How much percentage of Christmas shopping you've done so far?
80.
Ethan?
I would say close to 80 as well.
Brad?
Probably like 20.
Brad has no idea because his wife does it all.
No, I've shopped for my wife and that's it.
That's the only person I haven't shopped for.
Is it more difficult?
Yes, she has everything.
She has you.
Well, no, I wasn't meaning that. No, I was meaning more like she grew up spoiled.
Careful. No, she.
I love my wife.
Yes, you do. You better say that at least three more times on the show. Have you noticed in your shopping that, like, good grief,
mm-hmm.
financially?
Yes.
I have definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been like this for a couple years. So in a sense, I'm like, oh, here we are again.
I feel it worse this year than I've ever felt it before.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. I think I bought more throughout the year this year. That's always something I do. And that's actually on the list. Shop throughout the year because when
it's
you see things,
now. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. You can shop throughout the rest of this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's one great piece of advice. When you see something throughout the year that you think, oh, somebody I know would love that, you just grab it and you just hang on to it. The hard part is hanging on to it for that long and remembering that you have it.
Amy?
Yep.
Says to Ethan that you should get your wife a puppy.
I would love this. She is actually the one that is anti-get a dog at this point.
Well, if you were Ryan, you'd get her a puppy and tell her it's for her, but it's really for you.
Yeah. Well,
is that
I don't
fair?
Think she would accept
no,
it.
No, because I actually am the one who's the most resistant to getting a puppy. I do. I would love the puppy
I'm speaking eventually. Like metaphorically that if you could get a gift and give it to somebody else, but really benefit the most from it yourself, it wouldn't stop you.
Oh, absolutely. My son's got a peanut allergy. He's getting a massive peanut butter cup for Christmas.
Because they're your fave?
Like, oh, man, I guess I could eat that.
Number, this is from Dad.
Yeah. You know what I have, right? The next one on the list, speaking of which, you could bring a massive peanut butter cup to this. Have a potluck. If you're hosting Christmas, and you don't have to make everything from scratch. You can ask people to make things and bring them over to your house. Do you guys do this?
We don't turn down when people offer to bring stuff. Mm-hmm.
Is that norm? Is this normal for? Because I feel like that's a pretty normal thing for Thanksgiving for people to bring something over. One
absolutely.
Is that normal for Christmas as well?
That's why I'm asking, because I don't know.
I think it really depends on tradition.
Depends on the family. One side of my family does sandwiches for Christmas. My grandma's side. It's always been
what kind
a thing.
Of sandwiches?
Just like puts out a meat tray, cheese, and bread, and everybody makes sandwiches.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing, right?
And I don't
know
why I always loved that. It was like I didn't eat. Here's why. Because I put so much meat on those sandwiches that they were like the best sandwich I would eat all year. My wife's family, though, they do hors d'oeuvres and appetizers, which is also
what
very
kind
fun.
Of hors d'oeuvres?
Oh, calamari.
Can of peas.
Can of peas. Little smokies.
Anything you want to say about your wife? Take Ethan off the hook here a little bit.
Oh no, my
don't
wife's great.
Do it. She's the best.
Yeah, my wife's
speak
great.
Speak poorly about she your wife.
Not,
also,
yeah, she did not grow up spoiled.
Wait
she
a
grew
second.
Up dirt poor.
Don't tell us like where. Don't tell us where your wife is right now. But is your wife in a position to listen to the show?
Yes.
Does she?
Good question.
You don't know?
I don't think she does.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what's really happening here. She is monitoring. This is what women would do. They don't want you to think that they're on here. They want you to speak freely.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to be monitoring.
Well, I tell her all the time that she grew up spoiled.
Yeah.
It's almost a running joke now.
Yeah. But so I'm just going to say,
if she is listening, it's definitely her recognizing the running joke is continuing.
My husband, well, the three of us are all married to teachers. Mm-hmm. So we get away with a lot more when school's in session than
yes,
in the
we
summer.
Do.
We have to really straighten yep. it up. But they have prep periods. I have to look out for my best friend, Mrs. Wiggins, though, because she doesn't listen nor care.
She really doesn't listen to the show a whole lot. I think because she knows that I say things that are right on the line of acceptable.
She can't do anything
in front of our kids. Like they're borderline inappropriate all the time. And she's like, I don't know if I want to expose the kids to that.
Well, and she also can't do anything about it. So I would feel like I need to just pretend like I have nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. When you approach my wife and you say something you heard on the show, she's always like, oh, really?
Mm. Oh, anyway.
Okay. I remember that. Man, that happened at a marriage conference once. And that was weird. The next one is...
Seems like there's more
so
we could unpack nowhere. There.
Nope.
Stick around for the 2 o'clock hour, and once again, you'll see how much I prepared for the show.
Use newspaper for gift wrap. Now,
like Trump won. you know, it's not lost on me that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch just stopped printing a bunch of paper copies.
Yeah, they did.
Very timely.
They did. The problem with this, as a cheap person myself, is that you still have to go buy a newspaper. And newspapers aren't real cheap to buy anymore.
Take them out of the trash.
Would you argue that you are a cheap connoisseur?
Yeah. I
would. Oh, yes, he is.
I'm not arguing it. It just is. here's the ultimate cop-out. If you want to save money.
Before you say this, have you done this?
I mean, everybody does this.
Oh.
It's just if you're going to use this as an excuse to save money.
Regift?
No. I just saying this. I just want to spend time with people.
That that's the most now, quality gift that I could
exactly.
be
Exactly. If you say that out loud to the people around you in lieu of gifts,
do you
achieved something I'm not capable of.
Do any of you miss your family? Like when you get to be our age and you've got, you're kind of the sandwich generation, you've got your parents, maybe still your grandparents, and you probably have kids in the mix as well. Do you negotiate among your peer group, the people who are your age, like, here's what we should do or here's what we should not do, here's a budget? Like, do you work out those terms, or people just do what they do?
No, because I don't have enough people in my peer group that are doing that. I would, and I think...
Like siblings and stuff.
I guess it's just me and my brother. So I guess he and I do have that discussion.
Do you get gifts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do. So I guess we have that discussion.
Do you pre-qualify a budget, or do you just do what you do?
We kind of do what we do, but we also know what the budget is ahead of time. We don't speak it.
It's like unwritten?
It's, it's kind of there. We know it already.
This is the code.
$15, yeah. $17?
For me, it's $15.
For him?
For him, it's about $75.
What do you guys do?
We negotiate.
Hard negotiation?
No, not really.
We hire Ryan to come negotiate for you.
We basically say, this is what we're going to spend on your kids because we don't have kids of ourselves.
Not necessarily kids. Because
each other?
With each other.
For sure.
Do you give gifts?
My wife's brother and his wife, we make donations to charities in each other's names is what we do. And we negotiate. We kind of talk about it. It's like, all right, we want to hit this dollar amount. So that's what we do.
I could save you that money. I could take your siblings into what I call the Christmas room. It's got one hot light. Get a negotiation going.
Sounds like the beginning of a crime.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Come here, kiddo.
One light. Come on over
here. Merry Christmas, little boy.
Seems like you're giving a lot of money to charity and a lot of other people's names.
Do you have more tips?
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more. Let's talk to Tyrus and Jory Murdoch in the next hour. Don't go away.
Get more at 971talk.com.